ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरये ततो जायमुदीरये इष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। कंत्राय श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 9 कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 9 वर्स 15 तत्ते अरहतम नमस्तुति कर्म पूजा अरहतम नमस्तुति कर्म पूजा कर्म स्मृतिश्चरणयो श्रवणम कथायाम निश्चरणयो श्रवणम कथायाम संसेवया त्वयि विनेति षडंगया किम् गया किं भक्तिं जनः परमहंस गतौ लभेत तत्ते अरहत्तम नमस्तुति कर्म पूजः अरहत्तम नमस्तुति कर्म पूजः कर्म स्मृतिश्चरणयो श्रवणं कथायां कथायां संसेवया त्वयि विनेति षडङ्गया किम् संसेवया त्वयि विनेति षडङ्गया किम् भक्तिं जनः परमहंस गतौ लभेत जनः परमहंस गतौ लभेत तत्ते अरहत्तम नमस्तुति कर्म पूजः नमस्ति कर्म पूजः कर्म स्मृतिश्चरणयो श्रवणं कथायाम् श्रुतिश्चरणयो श्रवणं कथायां संसेवया त्वयि विनेति षडङ्गया किम् संसेवया त्वयि विनेति षडङ्गया किम् भक्तिं जनः परमहंस गतौ लभेत। नमस्तुति कर्म पूजा श्रवणं कथायां तत्ते अरहत्तम नमस्तुति कर्म पूजा all worshipable persons Namaha. Respectful obeisances.
Stuti karma puja.
Worshipping your lordship by offering prayers and other devotional activities.
Karma.
Activities being dedicated to you.
Smritihi.
Constant remembrance.
Charanayo.
Of your lotus feet.
Shravanam.
Always hearing.
Kathayam.
In topics about you.
Samsevaya.
Such devotional service.
Twai.
Unto you.
Vina.
Without.
Iti.
Thus.
Shad
Angaya. Having six different parts.
Kim.
How.
Bhaktim.
Devotional service.
Janaha.
A person.
Paramhamsa Gatau.
Obtainable by the Paramhamsas.
Gatau.
Sorry. Labhet. May attain. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, the best of all persons to whom prayers are offered, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because without rendering six kind of devotional service unto you, offering prayers, dedicating all the results of activities, worshipping you, working on your behalf, always remembering your lotus feet and hearing about your glories, who can achieve that which is meant for the Paramahamsas? Purport. The Vedas enjoin Nayam Atma Pravachena Labhyo Namedhaya Nabahuna Shrutena. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by studying the Vedas and offering prayers. Only by the grace of the Supreme Lord can one understand Him. The process of understanding the Lord, therefore, is bhakti. Without bhakti, simply following the Vedic injunctions to understand the Absolute Truth will not be helpful at all. The process of bhakti is understood by the Paramahamsas, one who has accepted the essence of everything. The results of bhakti are reserved for such a Paramahamsa, and this stage cannot be obtained by any Vedic process other than devotional service. Other processes such as jnana and yoga can be successful only when mixed with bhakti. When we speak of jnana yoga, karma yoga and dhyana yoga, the word yoga indicates bhakti. Bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, executed with intelligence and full knowledge, is the only successful method for going back home, back to Godhead. If one wants to be liberated from the pangs of material existence, he should take to devotional service for quick attainment of this goal. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasa Digaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So today morning we are discussing the last verse among the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. So 7950 marks the conclusion of one of the most important directly devotional or prayer sections of the Bhagavatam. So we have the standard depiction of Narasimha Dev ripping apart the intestine of Hiranyakashipu while Prahlad is offering a garland. Now this depiction is actually what is in art called as a composite depiction. Composite means two things are brought together. It is not that when Narasimhadev was ripping apart the belly of Hiranyakashipu, at that time Prahlad was garlanding him. The two events happened separately. First, Hiranyakashipu was destroyed and delivered, and thereafter, actually a long sequence of events happens. The various devatas offer prayers, and after the devatas' prayers get over, then Prahlad is invited to offer prayers. And at that time, Prahlad goes forward, offers the garland, offers his obeisances, and then the Lord becomes pacified, and then the speaking starts. It's like we have Bhagavatam class. Normally, if there are many senior devotees in an assembly, then the senior devotee is asked to give the Bhagavatam class. Then a younger devotee asked. Then the younger devotee is asked. So like that, in this assembly, all the devatas are assembled together. So the devatas are all allowed, they all offer prayers first. They have that seniority. Actually, when they are giving Bhagavatam class, we are glorifying the Lord. So just as the devatas are offering prayers, respecting the Lord, offering respect to the Lord. So Brahma, Shiva, Indra, all these great personalities are offered prayers. And Prahlad is in one sense like one of the is youngest, not just in terms of age, he is just a 5-year-old boy, but also in terms of relative position in the cosmic hierarchy, they are all devatas. He is born of an asura. So that's why Prahlad starts his prayer by declaring Brahma Dayo Munigana. So he says, all these devatas, and the munis and the devatas, they are fasaptvai katam gatayo vachasam pravahai naraditum purugunai radhana pipapru kim toshtu marati. So he says, all these devatas, they are situated in sattvaguna. The words that they spoke were like a shower of nectar. And if that shower of nectar could not satisfy you, O Lord, how can I satisfy you? And then, the next verse he says, actually, you are satisfied not by material things. You are satisfied. Naradhanayati bhavanti bhagumso. He says, you are satisfied. Bhaktyatutosha bhagavan. Gadyutapaya. That you are satisfied by bhakti alone. So Prahlad doesn't see his glory as his glory. It's a great honor that what great, great people have not been able to achieve, he has been able to achieve. So, the devatas have not been able to pacify the Lord, and Prahlad has been able to pacify him. But he does not see it as his own victory. He sees it, you know, there's like, say, there is a cricket match going on. And, you know, there are internationally famous bowlers. They are trying to get a batsman out. And they ball and ball and then nobody is able to get out. And a new person who is on his debut just comes in and easily bowls out the batsman. He'll become very proud. And I achieved what all these people could not achieve. So Prahlad does not have that kind of material consciousness at all. He has achieved what all these great people could not achieve. But he doesn't see that achievement as his own victory. He sees that as the glory of bhakti. And in a very beautifully cyclic sense, he begins his prayers by the glorification of bhakti and he ends his prayers by the glorification of bhakti. So here he says, Paramhamsa gatau labheta, that which is the destination of the Paramhamsas, how can we attain? Bhaktin janaha, by the practice of bhakti alone this can be attained. So the process of bhakti is what is consistently glorified in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One of the distinctive characteristics of the Bhagavatam as compared to the other Puranas and as compared to the broad body of Vedic literature is that the Bhagavatam not only glorifies bhakti directly with verses which say how wonderful bhakti is, but it glorifies bhakti by inverting the traditional social hierarchy. In every society there is a hierarchy. Even in a democracy, the elected head of government, the prime minister, is the head of the state. There are cabinet of ministers, and there are ministers of state, there are government officials, employees, there are general citizens. There is a hierarchy. So, like that, in the Vedic tradition also there is a hierarchy. The devatas are higher, the asuras are lower. The brahmanas are higher, the kshatriyas are lower. The men are higher, the women are lower. There are such hierarchies, but bhakti inverts all the hierarchies. And that is what is the consistent theme of the Bhagavatam. So this was demonstrated in, say, in the sixth canto, where there is the traditional depiction of the battle between the devatas and the asuras. Now all the Puranas, the Itihasas, they talk about this battle between the devatas and the asuras. And the Bhagavatam seems to be telling a similar narrative. But suddenly there is a twist in this battle between Indra and Rudrasura, that it turns out that Rudrasura is a great devotee and Indra is actually a materialistic devotee. He is also a religious person, but he is more or less materialistic. So in the normal depictions, the devata is higher than the asura and the devata wins by the grace of Vishnu. In this case also the devata wins, Indra wins, but it is Dhritarasura who ultimately wins, because Dhritarasura goes back to Godhead. And when Dhritarasura goes back to Godhead, it is he who has attained the ultimate victory. So although he lost the battle in this world against Indra, he won the war against illusion, he won the war against Vaya and attained life's supreme victory. So what the Bhagavatam has depicted through this story is that normally devatas are higher than asuras, but if a person born in an asura family has bhakti, then that asura becomes higher than devata, much much higher than devata. And that same theme which is depicted in the 7th canto through a battle between the devata and asura, now that is in the 6th canto that was depicted through the battle between the devata and asura, now it is depicted in the 7th canto in a different way, through a conflict among the asuras. So Hiranyakashipu and Prahalad both are asuras in one sense, asura in the sense of genealogy, not asura in the sense of psychology. The soul has two coverings. The soul has the covering of the body and the soul has the covering of the mind. So where the body comes from, that is what we refer to as genealogy. You know, this person comes in this dynasty, that person comes in that dynasty. And in traditional Vedic society, one's genealogy is very important. You know, which kul is somebody born in. So, especially when, say, marriages are to be done or something, traditionally the genealogy is considered very important to determine what kind of relationship should be formed. So now, there is genealogy, there is psychology, and there is spirituality. At the spiritual level, all of us souls are the same. But that sameness of all souls is not apparent now. Just like if there is a chandelier here or there is a bulb there. Now, the chandelier inside, say, may have a yellow light. But if it is covered by a red glass, then the light that will come out will have a reddish tint. If it is covered by a green glass, it will have a greenish tint. If it is covered by a blue glass, it will have a bluish tint. So the original light may be the same, but if there are three different chandeliers in which there are three different colors, colored glasses, and the light that comes out will be different. So like that, the soul in all bodies is identical. But depending on the covering on the soul behaves differently. And that covering is determined by the genealogy and by the psychology. So usually we judge people based on their externals. Now we say, oh, this person is Indian, this person is American, this person is a Chinese, this person is like this, this person is like that. We tend to look at people based on their externals. But their psychology may be very different from what their genealogy appears to be. That means some person might be a fierce looking giant kind of person, but that person may have a very sensitive heart. And some person may look very gentle and soft and diminutive, very small kind of person, but they may have a harsh tongue, a tongue that cuts and hurts far more than a sword. So the mentality inside, the psychology of a person may not always agree with the appearance that comes from the body, the physiology. So the relationship between genealogy refers to which dynasty we are coming. So the physiology refers to the kind of body that a person has, the body and its looks. So I am not going to go into technicality, but the simple point here is, the Bhagavatam depicts that although Prahlad is born in Asura family, although in his body Asura blood is running, in his heart there is no Asura mentality. There is actually transcendental bhakti over there. And Prahlad Maharaj, unabashedly, unhesitatingly, he admits that his glory is not his glory. He has got this glorious position, that is by the process of bhakti. Now, normally, one of my main services is writing. So when we write a book, so usually at the end of the book, or at the start of the book, the author writes acknowledgements. Now, this person guided me this way, this person guided me this way, this person guided me this way. So the acknowledgement, because the person when they write a book, they know that actually I alone couldn't have done this. So many people helped me in this. So I once saw a book where the acknowledgement began by saying, the first acknowledgement for this book goes to me. If I hadn't worked so hard, this book would not have been written. This is simply egomania. It's obnoxious level of egomania. You know, acknowledgement is the opportunity to thank others. You know, this person helped me this way, this person helped me that way. But to say that I acknowledge myself, it's an absurd level of egomania. So, actually speaking, others may not do it, but people do feel what I have achieved is my greatness. Now, yes, we do have to work hard to achieve whatever we achieve, but it is not just our effort. There are other factors involved which ensure that whatever we are able to do, we are able to do it. Consider for example sports. Sports is very performance driven. If we consider cricket, you know, a batsman has to bat well to lead the team to victory. A bowler has to bowl well if they are to get the batting team out. So in sports, performance matters very much. But even in something as performance driven as sports, performance is not all that matters. Performance matters, but performance is not all that matters. Say for example in cricket, you know, a lot is determined by the toss. Now in the start of the toss, which captain wins the toss determines who will bat first, who will bat second. And that is not in anyone's hand. Nobody can control the toss. People try their own ways to try to control the toss. There was a famous cricket captain. What he would do is, before he would go for the toss, he would toss the coin himself. And he would call out. And whatever he would call while going there, he would say that by probability, next time it will come opposite. So now while going to toss, he would call head, then later he would call tails. Now his idea was somehow he will try to play with destiny. But it doesn't work like that. See, many cricketers have their own superstitions. And many of these superstitions are famous. There was a cricketer who would always keep a red handkerchief in his pocket. And not fully in his pocket. One third out of the pocket, two third inside his pocket. And he would think, as long as the handkerchief is there, I will perform well. And sometimes he would drop a catch, before looking at the ball, he would look at his handkerchief. Have I dropped the handkerchief? Because of which I dropped the catch. So now, these cricketers are not foolish. In the sense that, they work hard, they train, they practice. And they know that they have to perform well. But they also know that there is something beyond me, which also plays a vital role in determining the results. So, even sports people, their superstitions are their ways of somehow trying to appease whatever is unknown. Whatever is unknown, how can I pacify it so that it will work on my side? So, the fact is that performance matters, but performance is not all that matters. There is the higher working of destiny, which also plays a vital role in the results that emerge. And acknowledging that in whatever I am able to do, there is a higher force which determines the results, that is the beginning of intelligence. That is the beginning of recognizing reality as it is. So Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers demonstrates this when he says, my dear Lord, it is bhakti by which you are satisfied. Whatever I have intelligence, whatever I have been able to achieve, it is all because of bhakti. So we will see this, the theme of the glorification of bhakti in the prayers also. Now, we don't have the time. I would have gone over all the 42 prayers and explained the flow in the prayers. But I'll just talk about 2-3 themes in which I'll show how he glorifies bhakti. On one side, Prahlad Maharaj says that actually I'm afraid of material existence. He says that, my dear Lord, this material existence is so dangerous, so terrible, that everybody is caught in illusion over here, and I long, O Lord, trastosmyaham krupanavatsala dussogra samsara chakra kadanat grasatam pranita baddhasva karma viryaushitam te angri moolam preeto apavarga charanam vayase kvadanu. So he says, my dear Lord, I am afflicted in material existence. The senses can catch the soul and drag the soul down any time. We can all fall to sinful activities and we can all suffer and die. And therefore, O Lord, I beg you, when will you call me to your lotus feet? Please, O Lord, rescue me from this material existence. So, on one level, he is praying here, this material existence is very terrible. And some verses later, he says, Naivo dvije para durattaya vai taranyas tadvirya gayan mahamrita magna chitta shocheta to vimukcheta sa indriyathan maya sukhaya bharamudvahato vimudhan. So he says, I am not afraid of material existence. He says, this material existence, how one will get over Vaitarani river, which is according to the cosmology, the border between the material and the spiritual world. How I will get over this, that great sages are worried about it. But I am not worried about it. Why am I not worried about it? Sistvadvirya gayan mahamrita magna chitta. In glorifying you, my consciousness is absorbed. And as my consciousness is absorbed in glorifying you, magna chitta. The impersonalists talk about merging of being. The bhaktas talk not about merging of being, bhaktas talk about the absorption of consciousness. It is not that the two become one physically, but rather two become one in the heart. So he says, magna chitta. He's not saying I have become one with you, but my consciousness is absorbed in you. And what is happening? Mahamrita. Mahamrita means great nectar I am experiencing. So the devotees have no urge to merge. The impersonalists, they want to merge with the absolute truth. But the devotees have no urge to merge. Why? Because in glorifying the Lord, Mahamrita, they experience the supreme nectar. And because they are experiencing the supreme nectar, so Prahlad Maharaj says that, I don't feel tempted in this material world. I don't feel afflicted by the temptations of this world. And normally, whenever we are practicing bhakti, the mind always makes us feel, hey, you are missing this, you are missing that, you are missing that. You know, you could eat this and enjoy. You could go there and do that and enjoy. There's so much pleasure you are missing in life. And that feeling that I am missing something, that often takes our consciousness away from Krishna towards other things. And if we dwell on that feeling a lot, then we are ourselves dragged away towards sense gratification. It all happens because the mind makes us feel you are missing something. But Prahlad Maharaj, when he is actually glorifying the Lord, instead of feeling that I am missing something, he feels that, oh, all the other people are missing this. This soche tato vimukha chetasa indriyathan maya sukhaya bharam udvahato vimudhan. He says, all these people, I am relishing the great nectar of Krishna bhakti, of glorifying Krishna, and everyone else is missing it. Shoche tato. I lament about that. Suppose we are having a feast and we see outside on the road some beggar who is starving, who has got a bloated stomach and matchstick like arms. And we may feel pity, oh, they are not having any food.
If you feel, okay, I have some extra food, please take this food. So if we are relishing something and others are not having that, we feel sadness for them. And if possible, we would like to share it with them. So normally when bhakti is not there and if one tries to practice the spiritual path, what happens is the same thing gets reversed. We feel, oh, they are enjoying so much sense gratification, I don't have anything. But when bhakti is there and when one is relishing bhakti, then one, what happens? Rather than feeling I am missing what materialistic people are enjoying, we feel, oh, they are missing what I am relishing. And let me share it with them. So once we start getting a taste for bhakti, then the temptations that Maya allures us with, the temptations lose their allure. Because we don't feel I am missing something. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying over here, actually I feel that they are missing something. And somebody says, no, they are enjoying so much. He says, no, it is Maya Sukhaya Bharam Udvahato Vimudha. Mudha is fool. Vimudha is an empowered fool. What is an empowered fool? A foolish person does many foolish things. But an empowered fool works hard to do foolish things. Works hard, and you know, materialistic people, many of them are very intelligent. But unfortunately, they use their intelligence for a foolish purpose. That means, they use a lot of their intelligence to get pleasure which lasts for just a few moments. So, if somebody works for say 15 years to get an engineering degree and they study diligently to get an engineering degree, going through various levels of education, say, oh, you work so hard. We appreciate that. But suppose somebody works say 15 years to get an engineering degree which is going to have a validity period for 1 month. See, what is the use of working like that? Yes, you have to work hard. Hard work is to be appreciated. But we shouldn't just work hard. We should work hard in a way that is intelligent, that is fruitful. So materialistic people work so hard for sense gratification, and often they crave for it, they slave for it. But at the end of it, the pleasure lasts just for a few moments. So what they, that's why he says two things, Maya, Sukhaya and Bharam. The Sukha that is there is Maya. That means it is illusion. So there is pleasure in material world. There is pleasure in sense gratification. The Prahlad Maharaj himself talks about this. He uses two different metaphors. Kutra shisha shuti sukha mrigatrish nirupa kvedam kalevaram asheisha rujam viroha nirvidyate natu jano yadapiti vidwan kamanalam madhulavaishamayandurapai. So he says, normally when prayers are offered to the Lord, at that time benedictions are asked for. So Prahlad Maharaj says, Kutra Ashish. What Ashish, what blessing can I ask from you, O Lord? Kutra Ashish Shruti Sukha Mrigatrish Nirupa. Shruti Sukha, all the happiness that is there in this world, it is Shruti Sukha. We just hear about it. People say, hey, that was so nice, that was so great, that was so nice, so wonderful. But when we actually experience it, Mrigatrish Nirupa, it is like a mirage. So the example of a mirage implies that there is no pleasure. Isn't it? Normally when we say mirage, there is no water over there. So animal may see a mirage and rush towards it and put its mouth, and what it gets in the mouth is burning sand. So the mirage example implies that there is no pleasure in material existence. But in that same verse, Prahlad Maharaj continues and he says, that madhulavai shamayandurapai. Madhu lavai, lavai is a very small quantity. Madhu is honey or nectar. So he says there is pleasure which is like honey, and it is intoxicating. Shamayandurapai, it is this honey is so intoxicating that it is almost impossible to give it up. But lavai, it's a very small quantity. So now these two examples, Mrigatrishni, Miraj, and Madhulavai, a drop of honey, they seem to say two different things. One, Miraj signifies that there is no pleasure in material existence. Whereas Madhulavai seems to say that there is pleasure. Madhu, honey, is delicious. So what is the reality? Is there pleasure in material existence or is there no pleasure in material existence? Actually, there is pleasure.
there is pleasure in material existence. What is the illusion is our imagination about the quantity of the pleasure. The pleasure is there, but it is very less. And our mind imagines, oh, if I just do this, there will be so much enjoyment. So there is very little pleasure, and our mind imagines that pleasure to be so much. And then we crave for it. In the Uddhava Gita, in the 11th canto, it is said, Kshudra Sukha Uru Trishna. The Sukha, the pleasure is Kshudra, it is very little. But the Trishna, the craving is Uru, it is very strong, very intense. So there is pleasure, but because of our imagination, we think, oh, there is so much pleasure. Now, the Kaushitaki Upanishad talks about a hierarchy of pleasures. For example, it says, whatever pleasure is on the earth, there is 1,000 times pleasure more in heaven. Then there is 1,000 times more pleasure in Brahmaloka. There is 1,000 times more pleasure in Brahmananda. And then Bhakti Samut Sindhu continues that hierarchy and says, there is 1,000 times more pleasure in Bhakti. So now, if we consider this hierarchy of pleasure, if the pleasure in this world is zero, if there is no pleasure in this world, then 0 into 1000 is 0, 0 into million is 0, 0 into 10 million or billion or trillion or quadrillion or zillion, gazillion is all 0. So this hierarchy would have no meaning if the pleasure in this material existence was 0. There is pleasure in the material world, but it is very, very small. The problem is our mind imagines it to be a very big pleasure. So when the mirage example is given, the point of the mirage example is not to say that there is no pleasure. The point of the mirage example is the illusion of perception. That when in a mirage we see something which is not there, so we think there is so much pleasure here, but actually the pleasure turns out to be very little. So now this, if we see here, this prayers of Prahlad conclude with the declaration that, therefore, O Lord, nobody can attain you except by the practice of bhakti. And he lists some of the limbs of bhakti. And he says, therefore, we should practice this bhakti. That's his conclusion. So in the Karmakanda literature, there is a lot of glorification of heavenly pleasures. Yamimam Pushpitam Vacham. Krishna also talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita in 2.42-43. When he said that pushpitambacham, flower-like words, they describe the heavenly pleasures. But they are temporary. And avipaschitaha, people who are not discriminating, not very wise, they get attracted to these pleasures. So here, Prahlad Maharaj is another way inverting the hierarchy. Normally in the hierarchy, for people in the Vedic times, going to Swarga was considered to be a very great goal. And following the processes that would take one to Swarga is considered to be a very great thing. But Prahlad Maharaj says, oh, all those processes, they are of no use. They cannot get help one to attain the Supreme Lord. One can attain the Supreme Lord only through bhakti. And here it glorifies the process of bhakti. It's interesting that normally when we offer prayer, for most people, prayers are a means for asking the Lord for something. Oh Lord, please do this for me, please do that for me. So Prahlad Maharaj has offered 42 verses in prayer and he concludes without asking for anything at all. So there is no request at all over here. He just saying, therefore, oh Lord, he concludes his prayer with a glorification of bhakti. Tatte arhattama namasati karma puja. Karma shruti is charanayo shravanam kathayam. He lists the process of bhakti and my dear Lord, without practicing this, who can attain you? So the implication, what is it? That, oh Lord, please bless me so that I can engage in your bhakti. He's not asking for anything else. Now after this, Narasimha Dev will again ask, oh Prahlad, please do your prayers and please ask for some benediction. And then please ask for some desire. Then Prahlad says, my dear Lord, my only desire is that there be no desire in my heart. Yadi dasyasi me kamam varam swam vadarshava kamanam hridayam asamroham bhavatas suvrunevaram. Let there be no desire in my heart. The Narasimhadev says, no, please ask for some benediction. And then Prahlad says, my dear Lord, please, my father was so sinful, but liberate him from material existence.
And then Prahlada Narasimhadev said that actually your father has already been liberated because he was your father. For a pure devotee, Trisapta Pita Puta, 21 generations are liberated. So Prahlada Maharaj, his prayers, they cover a wide scope, but the central theme is that they glorify the process of bhakti to inspire us to practice the process of bhakti. And the process of spiritual advancement is the process of increasing appreciation of what we have. It is not that advanced devotees chant some other mantra. It is not that advanced devotees read some hidden books. It is not that advanced devotees worship some other secret devata. No, they are reading the same shastra, they are chanting the same mantra, they are worshipping the same devata. But their appreciation of that mantra, of that shastra, of that devata, of that supreme being, that has increased a lot. So here, when Prahlada Maharaj has the Lord of the universe in front of him, asking him for benediction, and he's saying, I don't want anything, my dear Lord, except to love and serve you, except the opportunity to practice bhakti. By that, we can understand how valuable this is, how valuable bhakti is. Suppose there is a feast, and the feast, you know, there is rice, dal, sabzi, chapati, and there is sweet rice, and there is some very special delicacies are there. And then now everybody goes there and says, please give me that sweet rice, please give me that sweet rice. And somebody else goes and says, give me that item. And nobody else is noticing that item. What is that? Then you go and ask, what is that item? Say, oh, this item, you know, it is so nutritious, it is so delicious, it is extremely healthy food. They say, oh, really? You know, suppose we know that person is very intelligent and that person is a connoisseur. And if they are taking an item, then we think, even if we don't know about that item, we will say, hey, this must be a good item. Let me try it out. We will also take it. So like that, externally speaking, bhakti may not appear to be very glorious. You know, you just take a bead bag and chant. If you do yoga, you sit in a yogic posture, you can twist your body in a way which nobody else can. It seems very impressive. Bhakti externally seems very simple. But when we see great souls like Prahlada Maharaj asking for nothing except bhakti, then by seeing their desire for bhakti, our appreciation of bhakti increases. We also feel, hey, they are asking for bhakti, that is what I should also be asking for. And in that way, as our appreciation for bhakti increases, then our absorption, we try to increase our absorption in bhakti. It's like, say, if I am eating some food, but I think that's a very ordinary food, then I am eating that food, I am looking what other items are going to come. You know, what other items are going to come. But if I see someone else, they are eating that food, closed eyes, you know, they are just in samadhi eating that food. Hey, what is this? What is so special about it? Let me taste it. Hey, really, this is very good. I didn't notice it only. So like that, what happens is, in our initial stages when we practice bhakti, we may be practicing bhakti, but we are distracted with other things. Hey, maybe what about this? What about that? What about that? But when we see advanced devotees absorbed in the practice of bhakti, what is there in this? Let me find it out. And Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham Atyantam Sukhamashnute. In 6.27, the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about Sparsha. Earlier in 5.22, he has talked about Yehi Samsparshaja Bhoga Dukkayona Yevati. He has talked about sense gratification, wherein the senses come in contact with the sense objects. But here, in the 6th chapter, he talks about Samsparsha. Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham, contact with Brahma. And he says that gives Atyantam Sukhamashnute, that is the ultimate happiness. So this contact with Krishna is Param Brahma, is the Supreme Brahma. This contact with Krishna, how does it happen? It doesn't happen just like I barge into the deity room and touch the deities. That is not a contact. Yes, it is good if we have the opportunity to serve the deities in any way. But the contact with Krishna is a contact of consciousness. And that contact of consciousness happens through devotion. When there is devotional intention in our heart, then when we remember Krishna, we actually contact Krishna. When there is that devotional intention absent, then even when I am trying to think about Krishna, my mind is going elsewhere. And that Brahma Samsparsha doesn't happen. And when Brahma Samsparsha doesn't happen, then there is no experience of Sukha. What to speak of Atyantika Sukha. So what is happening for the advanced devotees when they practice bhakti is, the Brahma Samsparsha is happening, the contact with Krishna is happening, and because of the contact with Krishna, they are experiencing sublime happiness. And Prahlad Maharaj, because he is experiencing this contact, Mahamrita he is relishing, and therefore he says, my dear Lord, what can I ask for you? There is nothing to ask except for the absorption in your bhakti. Your bhakti is so glorious. He is right now engaged in bhakti. He is glorifying the Lord. He is offering vandanam, prayer. That is a limbo bhakti. And he is saying, this is what is required, O Lord, to attain you. Without this, nobody can attain you. And with this, you are already attained. Therefore, O Lord, I don't want anything except your bhakti. And that, the more our desire becomes more and more for Krishna's bhakti, the more we will start relishing the taste of bhakti. And then we can march ahead steadily and joyfully towards Krishna. So I'll summarize, then we can have a few questions. He talked about in this verse, Prahlad Maharaj says, he lists the last of his prayers and he simply glorifies the process of bhakti. And I discussed how the Bhagavatam, whole Bhagavatam is a glorification of bhakti. And one way it glorifies bhakti is by showing how bhakti inverts all normal hierarchies. Those who are normally considered higher become lower if they don't have bhakti, and those who are lower become higher if they have bhakti. So we discussed this inversion in terms of Vritrasura and Indra. The Asura becomes higher than Devata because he has bhakti. And similarly over here in the 7th canto, through the Prahlad pastime also, Prahlad is an Asura, and we discussed in terms of, you know, there is spirituality, there is psychology, and there is genealogy. So in terms of his genealogy, he is born in Asura family. But what determines a person is not just their genealogy alone. It is primarily their psychology. As souls, everybody is the same. The primary conditioning is not in the body. The primary conditioning is in the mind. And normally, certain kinds of bodies may have certain kinds of mind associated with them. That means Asuras, they have Asuri body and they have Asuri mentality. But it is not necessary. And Prahlad demonstrates here that although somebody might have Asura body, that person can have not just a Daivi mentality, but a higher than Daivi mentality, a Parabhakti mentality. And here, Prahlad Maharaj is able to achieve what the great Devata like Brahma, Shiva, Indra, they are not able to achieve. And through this, there is a demon, there is a devotee, there is Hiranyakashipu, and there are the Devatas. And Hiranyakashipu is defeated. But it is not the Devatas who are praised and are glorified. Actually, here it is another demon, Prahlad, who is glorified. The Devatas are not able to pacify Narasimhadev, but it is Prahlad who pacifies. But Prahlad, rather than taking credit for what he has done, he says that it is actually by the grace of bhakti that I was able to achieve it. So we discussed how in whatever we achieve in life, our endeavor plays a part. But it is not all that determines the results. Performance matters, but performance is not all that matters. We discussed in sports how even sportsmen have their superstitions because they recognize that there is something unknown which shapes the results also, and they try to appease that unknown by their pet superstitions. So ultimately it's not a matter of superstition, it's a matter of devotion. That the unknown is Krishna, and the unknown Krishna can be pacified, satisfied, appeased through devotion. So Prahlad gives credit to the Lord who is the object of devotion and to the process of devotion by which one can connect with the Lord. And we discussed how at one level Prahlad says, I am so fallen, I am trapped in material existence, I am afraid of material existence. But at another level he says, I am not afraid of material existence. So it is not that when he is saying, I am not afraid of material existence, he is not thinking, I am such a great person. He is saying, because I am absorbed in bhakti, so I don't feel like I am missing anything. And that's why I am not agitated in this world. I am satisfied. And instead of I feeling that I am missing something that the materialistic people are enjoying, I am feeling that they are missing the glories of the Lord that I am relishing. And therefore, I want to share this with them. So as we become absorbed in bhakti, we become less and less vulnerable to temptation because we don't feel as if we are missing anything. Rather, we feel others are missing what I am having. And we discussed in terms there about, is there pleasure in material existence? Yes, there is madhulavai, a small drop of pleasure. The mrugatrishni, the illusion is about the quantity. There is so little pleasure that it is not worth pursuing. It's like working 15 years to get an engineering degree that lasts for 1 month. So there is pleasure, but it's not worth pursuing.
And the real pleasure is in bhakti and is in remembrance of Krishna. And the process of spiritual advancement is a process of increasing appreciation of what we have. Because the more we appreciate something, the more we become absorbed in it. And we can gain that appreciation by looking at the example of the great souls. So when we see somebody relishing a delicacy which everyone else is neglecting, we wonder, what is this? Why is this person relishing it so much? Then we also try it out and we observe, oh, this is so nice. So like that, bhakti externally may not seem anything very glorious. But when we see great souls wanting nothing other than bhakti, then that inspires us. Maybe there is something in bhakti. We try to absorb ourselves in it. And the more we absorb ourselves, because of that enhanced appreciation, the more we relish it. And as we relish it, we can march forward joyfully in our journey towards Krishna. So thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, please. You can ask aloud. I'll repeat. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So how can we have confidence, and how can we ensure that the confidence doesn't turn into pride?
Confidence may be very inspiring and enthusiastic.
Yeah, we need confidence to do some service. Yeah. At the same time, we don't want pride to make ourselves infatuated. So how do we do that? Yes. There are two different things here. First is that there is the recognition that Krishna has given different gifts to different people. And acknowledging some gifts which we have been given, that is not pride. If the focus is on Krishna and you think that this is Krishna who has given this to me, then actually rather than pride, it will bring about gratitude. So the focus can be, we all have certain gifts, certain talents. Now some of us, some of the talents may be immediately apparent, some talents may have to be explored and discovered and developed. Whatever it is. Now to look at our talents and look at whatever abilities we have and to acknowledge them as Krishna's gifts to us, that won't lead to pride. That will lead to gratitude. And that, acknowledging whatever we have, that's what breeds confidence. So for example, if we are able to speak fluently, that's an ability. Others may not have that ability. Now if we look at others, we'll think I am superior to them. They can't speak, I can speak. But if instead of looking at others, we look at Krishna. We focus on Krishna. Yes, this is some way I can serve Krishna. You know, others, they will have some other abilities with which they will be able to serve Krishna. See, pride comes when our vision is on the world, not on Krishna. When our vision is on the world, if we see that I have something more than others, I become proud. And if I see that others have something more than me, then I become inferior. I develop inferiority complex. In both cases, the problem is we are just focusing on ourselves and others. But instead, if we focus on ourselves and Krishna, then our awareness of our abilities does not lead to pride. Rather, it gives us the confidence to serve Krishna. So, what we have is God's gift to us. What we become is our gift to God. What we become is our gift to God. Means I have given some ability to speak. So, by using that speaking ability, I become a good speaker. I share Krishna's message. And that is my offering to Krishna. So this way, if we keep it not between us and the world, but between us and Krishna, then awareness of our abilities, rather than interfering with our devotion, can enhance our devotion, can assist in our bhakti by giving us tangible means by which we can perform bhakti. So seeing that Krishna has given us abilities, that can give us confidence. And it's not that somebody has to have an extraordinary ability. Even an ordinary ability, if it is used in a diligent way, that can also lead to substantial contributions. So seeing them as Krishna's gifts can help us to have confidence without letting it breed arrogance. Does that answer the question? Thank you. Any other questions? Yeah.
My question is related to the lecture of day before yesterday. So in that lecture you are telling when we can feel the emotions from proximity and we can analyze the emotions from distance.
Yeah,
but many times what happened? We analyzed our emotions, means whatever the bad or good emotions were come, we are analyzing. But many times that analyzing that emotion, that itself is not sufficient. So sometimes if we want to overcome that particular emotions, so what else we require than analyzing? Like,
okay. So analyzing emotions is sometimes not enough. How do we overcome some undesirable emotions? Yes, to overcome something, we have to know three things. You know, we have to know where it comes from. Where it comes from. Second is, how it grows. Third is, how it can be weakened. So just, it's a simple thing. You know, if an enemy is going to attack me, now if I'm in a house, I need to know from where is the enemy going to attack. So where does it come from? Okay, if India, Pakistan is going to attack India, at this point, the border is weak. Okay? And, you know, how does the enemy become strong? Is it that they've got machine guns? Is it that they've got bombs? Is it they've got weapons of mass destruction? What do they have? What strengthens them? And how can I weaken them? You know, if, say, we create a, if the enemy is attacking, and you create a smoke screen over them. Smoke screen means they just can't see anything. Then they can't attack. So basically, to battle an enemy, we need these three things. To know where it comes from, how it grows, and how it can be weakened. So similarly, with respect to our unhealthy emotions, when we analyze them, it is not just analysis means, you know, okay, this happened and this happened and this is how it happened. We try to analyze, okay, how did I, okay, I did something wrong at that time. How did it happen? Where did that emotion come from? If we find that there are certain specific stimuli that are the source of that emotion, then we try to create a distance or we try to avoid that. You know, we all have certain temptations. So alcoholics are told, don't ever go to bars. Don't keep alcohol with you. And if you want to meet with friends, but don't meet with them in a bar. So that is where the alcohol desire comes for them. So we can find out where the desire comes from. And then try to avoid those situations. We may not be able to avoid them completely, but we can minimize that exposure. Second is how they go strong. The certain times, certain stimuli cannot be avoided. But we can find out what makes them strong. So for example, say, when I am alone, or when I am bored, or when I find that if somebody has spoken something which hurts me, and then when I am hurt, at that time I become more vulnerable to, say, certain emotions, certain temptations. Then I try, okay, this is the situation when I am weak, and at that time they become strong. So then what happens is, we are aware. This is how that temptation comes, but this is how it becomes strong. And I find out, how can I weaken it? Because how can I weaken it? That means, okay, if when I am feeling agitated, if I just start chanting Hare Krishna, or if I hear some kirtan, or if I just come in temple and take darshan, or if I start reciting some shlokas, or if I just start doing something physical, I find out how I can take my thoughts away from there and get them somewhere else, thereby weakening the desire. So we find out what is the way we can weaken that desire. And by this, if we have these three things, you know, the origin, the genesis, and the weakening, the process of weakening, then the analysis is of some point. So the analysis should be purposeful to equip us with means to resist the emotion. And if we don't do this kind of analysis, we just fall to the same trap again and again and again. I'm just like this only, start thinking. I always overeat. I always oversleep. I always do this. I always do that. I'm just like this. No. You don't have to think like that. I oversleep. When do I oversleep? What happens exactly? And I try to find out the situation. Maybe, you know, I don't put an alarm, or I just sleep alone, or I, whatever it is. So if we analyze whatever is happening and try to find out how it comes, how it grows, and how it can be weakened, then we can prevent the relapses. And that requires some distance. When we are in the heat of emotion, either we are doing things, something wrong, or we are just beating ourselves up for having done something wrong. Neither is very helpful. I am so foolish, I keep doing this thing. That is not helpful in rectifying it.
So we have a distance and observe ourselves and learn. And then when we learn, then we can find out what is the way to overcome those emotions. Okay? Thank you very much. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shila Prabhupada ki, Gaurabhaktavinda ki, Jai.